myself, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Well, Declan, so we know you have two All-Stars. Everybody knows that. But what I didn't really know is that you also broke the news to another Tipperary football All-Star. There's not too many of you. That he won an All-Star the night before he was supposed to know. So you might tell us a little bit about that there.
Oh, yes. Mikey's selling tails. Yeah, I have a habit of jumping 2 feet into things, but sure. Yeah, I prematurely congratulated him, but... they took it in good spirits, and you know, that was egg on my face. I felt guilty after, but sure, it's done and dusted. But at least he got the award, which is the main thing.
Yeah, but here's the thing I was surprised about. So obviously the one team knows the day before, the other team is surprised on the night. But like, I mean, you've got two All-Stars. Were you surprised on the night? And surely you're told the day before that it's not a complete shock that night.
Well, I knew both times. That's why I text.
Right.
Mikey. You know, so we knew. Well, I knew. I actually got a friend of mine actually text me the night before, day before 2003. I didn't know it that day either, so I kind of got caught the same way. But yeah, we knew. So maybe they changed the way to do things. But I think I think it's important that you do know. You know, like I kept it from my family and my parents and all that I knew, just to give them the surprise more so than myself, you know.
Right, okay. So like both times you won it was supposed to be the surprise on the night. It wasn't the day before.
The day before in 98 was, I can't think now, 98 in 2003 was on the night. So 2001. I think 98 we knew beforehand. We were the team to know beforehand. So but it's nice, like I said, it is nice to know rather than waiting or trying to expect things on the night, you know. But obviously then the lads that haven't received the award don't know, so you have to keep it all to yourself.
Right, okay, it's an interesting enough one. Come here, you're an unusual one in Tipperary in that you're from South Tip, which is football, so there's nothing unusual about that, but you gave both codes equal time growing up.
Well, I wouldn't say equal time, like obviously South Tip and Wild Rovers was all predominantly football, but obviously I loved hurling as well, and every young lad just wants to play hurling for Tip. And being from a junior club, it was never easy, you know. So you're always kind of hoping you get a trial here and there, and then obviously trying to make the squad was always even harder. So I managed to make Tony Forrestal panel 2 years in a row, like it was a sub 2 years in a row. And so I found out then that at that stage it was kind of, you know, being from a predominantly football club, that it was always going to be, I won't say a struggle, but it was going to be harder to get on the team because I just wasn't playing that quality hurling, you know, and made Nina co-op under 16 teams and Tip minors then in 96 when we won the All-Ireland and started the replay against Galway. So, I did give it probably equal time. But then back then, Willie, it was, you know, there was no real hard training. There was no 5 nights a week job. It was just a case of getting to hurling training, getting to football training. So it was a lot easier than it is now, obviously enough. But definitely loved both. Had a massive draw for hurling. But as you said, predominantly football down South Tip and Wild Rovers, it was always going to take over.
Yeah, well, that was, I suppose, it was in the blood. I think your grandfather was called the footballer. That was his nickname.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, John Lonergan. So it was always in the family, you know. And you know, my older brother was a smashing footballer as well, and my younger brother played club and played county minor as well. So it's in the family. And as you said, my grandfather, Lord rest him, was known as the footballer. So it was going to filter down to me at some stage, you know. But again, being from my Rovers, it was always going to be football.
It was because I suppose even though, like, you know, those ages, you're the same age as me when you're like 13, 14, that's when Tip were winning All-Irelands in hurling. You know, you were going to watch them playing football, and I'm sure it wasn't, you know, anything glamorous, you know. So it was like, were you struggling at any stage wondering which you might play, or was it always going to be the football?
No, it was always going to be football. Like I was kind of lucky in a way. Like I saw Tip playing 93, 94 Munster senior football finals against Cork, you know, and they were unlucky in 94. So it was kind of oh, I won't say sexy, but it was out there, you know.
Right.
To go to a Munster Senior Football Final was huge, you know. And then in 95, we won the minor football Munster title out of the blue. So that's, you know, so there was always little carrots there to say, just there is something in this, you know. But like you said, like growing up, it was always hurling and Tip. But then again, Tip had a barren, the barren spells in the hurling as well during that period as well. So, but no, it was just the way things progressed and gradually went to football. And but like I said, up to under 21 and even senior, you know, we gave hurling a fair crack and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I remember that 1995 minor team because Westmead had beaten us in the Leinster final before you played them in the All-Ireland semi-final. You got a terrible start.
Terrible start, and I shit the course as well, excuse the language, one-on-one with the goalie. I hit it straight at him when the game was really in the melting pot. And it was just, at that stage, I was first-year minor and we came off a good game against Cork in the Munster final. And I say getting to Crow Park, like the old Crow Park, you came out the far corner, it was just the place to be. But I think the occasion definitely got to us. And I remember the ball broke to me, and I knew what I wanted to do with it. And you think that's the way it happens? Not a hope. I hit it straight at. I can't think of the chance name in the goal, but
maybe well, Lennon,
of anyway.
Lennon, I think, was his name
yes,
back then.
I remember. And he came out off the line, Woody, and it was in my head. Will I just tap it over him? And no, I went for power and straight down his throat. It's a good save out of him, but if I had my time back, you know, I'd have just slotted it. But
yeah,
and it would have been, it could have been different then, because you know, playing all Ireland minor final would have been massive, you know.
Yeah, it would have been. So where did you, were you kind of naturally left and right footed, or did some coach pull you aside and tell you, you know, you're going to need this for, you know, the top level?
Well, no, it wasn't even the coach. It was just, I'll be honest, and people might say it sounds silly, but like when I was under 10, 11, 12, like we were never C in club level, you know. We were struggling to put teams together. You'd never compete in A, never mind B, you know. So I just more or less said to myself that, you know, you have to start kicking with the left. And there's times of training like I just wouldn't do anything when you kick with my left, no matter how bad it was, you know. So then you see it develop and you see yourself getting that bit better, and you just stick at it, you know. And the guy wasn't, and my pace over 20 or 30 yards wasn't the best, but I always backed myself over 5 or 10. And if you have the option then to kick left or right, it took you out of so much trouble. And thankfully it did, because you see so many, even inter-county footballers now that aren't over strong or on their weaker foot, you know. So I just practiced and practiced, and luckily it came off, you know.
Right, interesting. So it was your own decision, and what, you just kept doing it in training until you got it right?
Yeah, you know. And it's
what age were you when you were deciding to do this?
At 10, 11, 12, you know, it was mad stuff, you know. But, and the flip side of that, really, like if I spent more time on my weaker side in hurling, it would have made a massive difference. But I just didn't do that. To this day, that's my downfall in hurling. It would be the lack of strength on the poor side, you know. So it's just one of those things I concentrate on the football, on the big ball.
Right. Jeez, that's a good one, though, that you're fairly driven at that age to be practicing your left. I think I was 22 when I started practicing it when I went up into the... I suppose when you're a corner forward, you know, I was a wing back. I didn't really need it as much.
Yeah. You just hoofed it anywhere. It didn't matter where it went, you know.
Yeah.
In those poor souls.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the way it worked. So you mentioned 1995. That was a good year for you, so, because you obviously won the Munster Minor and you won a county title with Mile Rovers in goals. I nearly fell off the chair when I saw that, because we had Owen Kelly on the show, another Tip man, doing a tribute show last week, and he was a goalkeeper too at one time.
Owen probably played senior at 9, that's what I mean. That's probably the reason he was in goal. He was so good. But no, I was... again, that year, my dad, in fairness, it's one day I'd always praise him for. He just said, "No way was I going out the field at that age," you know. So it was kind of a compromise then. Would I go on goal? So I did, you know. And I played under 21 in goal in 94. I think it was 15 or 16, and we won the county B title. But so it was just a punt. Jim Cahill, our manager, I'd say, he just said, you know, he kind of wanted me playing, whether it was in goal or out the field. And it worked out. We got through it, you know. I left in a few clangers all right, but we got great protection from the like back then, well, you know yourself, a full back was a full back. He didn't leave anyone in, you know. There was no danger of getting a belt. So I think my father was kind of happy with that. But as the year turned out, it was mad. We ended up getting some Munster Club final in Parky Ring against Lawn Rangers, and they absolutely clobbered us on the same day. But I ended up coming out the field in the second half, you know. So that was my first taste of real senior football out the field.
Right, and you would have been 16 then, right, in 95?
I would have been 17 in the June, yeah.
Right, okay. Jesus, so like, I mean, it's pretty young. When you moved up to senior level then with Tipperary, you ran into a team called Kerry. You played them 8 times in 11 years, which is absolutely, yeah. It's poor Clare at the moment are on the same run, at the same kind of thing. But like, I mean, I saw a quote from you saying, you said, my abiding memory of those years, training for 8 months, draw Kerry, gone in the first round. You'd always be watching the draw Christmas to see could ourselves, Clare or Waterford, or Clare, Limerick, Waterford meet up and get a run of games.
Yeah, and that was, and I'd say, I would imagine it was the same for the other three counties, and like I said, there was never any disrespect for any of those counties, but all you were dreaming of and hoping for was a run, you know, because back then, as you well know, like it was knockouts, and that was it, you know. So we got Kerry in 96. I remember Seamus McCarthy. I played a club match, divisional match in Clonmel 3 weeks beforehand, and one of those days where I had a stormer, and Seamus McCarthy and PG Savage came over to me after there was manager and selector of the tip team to see would I come in to the senior squad 3 weeks before we played Kerry. And I was kind of hesitant, Woody, because, you know, so you just don't know what way other lads would react and to a little whippersnapper coming in at this stage. And so, again, I spoke to my dad and said, sure, why not? We give it a go. And I ended up starting the 3 weeks later against Kerry, you know, inside in Clonmel. And we gave him a great rattle up to 10 or 12 minutes to go, and Derek Kinnaird buried the ball, and kind of they had to beat as well in the end. But that was my introduction to it. I said, geez, I love this. Clonmel was packed. It was a dreadful day. But then, as you said there, you get Kerry 8 times in 11 years, you kind of get sick of it then, you know. But there was a couple of years there where, you know, 97, I recall, we were good enough to beat them. We were beaten by 4 points, I think, in Tralee. 98 Munster final, they were better than us. There was no doubt about that. And then 99, the famous goal.
Yeah.
That wasn't, you know, that was, like, the 97 and 99 were probably 2 years where we felt that we had Kerry. And I think they felt that too, you know. So, but the rest of the years were just, you know, wipeouts.
Well, that was it. So, like, I mean, 97, 98, 99, you were more than a match for them. And we're going to talk about those three games with Seamus Monaghan in a little while. But, like, 96 and 97, you went out early in against Kerry. But 98, you got that draw that you finally wanted. You actually got the perfect draw. You got Limerick, you got Waterford, and you got Clare. And that was your first All-Star in 98. So you hit 1-6, 9 points, and then 1-7.
Yeah. You know, that's the run. Like, and to get it all in one go was huge, because, like, oh, I've stated, like, that, like, aside from the Tommy Murphy Cup, I've 25 championship matches in 12 seasons with it. You know,
I was reading that. I can't believe that. Like, 25 appearances, and like that. Sure, when you draw Kerry for 8 years, that kind of explains 25 appearances in 12 years.
Yeah, you know, so it wonder, like, you see lads clocking up 60 and 70. You know, you say how is it possible? But we just obviously with the knockout system and drawing Kerry all those times. So it was just when you get four games in the one summer was just magical, you know. So and again, at that stage, if you were lucky enough, or if you had beaten Kerry, you were in the last four, you know. So it was all different. But listen, I wouldn't change a thing, Willie. But obviously, you'd love to have more of a return for the amount of years you put into it, and all my teammates are the same way, you know.
Yeah. How much of a frustration was that, Declan? Like, I mean, because the way you're regarded in Gaelic football terms, the career you had, and, you know, the things you were able to do, points you could score, that you got the Tommy Murphy Cup, you had a great performance against Donegal in Croke Park, you know, you had a couple of Munster finals, but, like, you know, your talent deserved more. Did that frustrate you, or did you just kind of just get on?
Like I said, it never did. Never. I have to say, it never did. And you'd often hear, you probably, the rumours that was going up to yourselves to be a teammate of yours, and, you know, three and with Leash, with Mikko, you know, you'd hear all those things, but I was never officially approached. Maybe off the record, there was lads trying to suss me out, which I didn't realise probably at the time. But you know, it was never frustrating. It was just like I valued, you know, and I don't mean to be sappy, but I valued your friendship and the camaraderie, and you know, and hoping that you can make some sort of a breakthrough or get some bit of a carrot there that'll drive you on for the next year. And we did that, like in the, as you said, the Munster finals in 98 and 02, and to get to play Donegal in Croke Park was just, you know, I just remember that when it was announced, the fixtures were announced that we played Donegal and they were fixing for Croke Park. It was just, it was electric, you know. Yeah. And there were little things that kept us all going. You know, there was never any notions of going anywhere else. I always conscious that I was never bigger than any of the team either, you know. Just bust yourself and bust the gut to do the best you can and see where it takes you, you know. But other than that, there was never any options of leaving Tip.
I was Portlaoise then. I think you were transferring to Portlaoise so you could play with Leash. Was that that was the one I heard?
No, I think it was Stradbally.
Oh, Jesus, no, God almighty. Well, I was definitely told you were thinking about transferring to Portlaoise. I was overjoyed. How does an unofficial approach sound like?
It's hard to know. Like I said, it's only later on in life you realise, geez, maybe that was a roundabout way of seeing what way my head was, you know. But it was never an option, never an issue, never even came into it. Was just, I think it was always linked to Mikko, you know. Mikko probably said a flipping comment he got, probably got Brian Lacey in 98, you know, as well. And yeah, I suppose it followed on from that, you know. But it just seemed to be where Mikko went at the time, you know. I was kind of linked. Like, it was nice, nice to be thought of in that manner, but as I said, it was just all rumours.
Right. Okay, you mentioned the 2002 Munster final. That was definitely one that got away. Like, I mean, you should have beaten Cork that day. Replay didn't go too well, but you know, underdogs get one chance. You know, like, I mean, that was definitely a near miss. We're going to talk about some of the near misses against Kerry. Why could you not just get over the line, do you think?
Well, in 02, again, we were savagely fit, myself included. Like, I was just back from a groin operation. I missed the 2001 season. And I was never in better shape, or even fitness, like, and myself and running never went well together, but it was just on top of things that year. And we all were. Tom McGlinchey had us in unbelievable in shape. Obviously, Cork were, I'd say, doing a bit of turmoil as well under Larry at the time, you know, and they maybe took us for granted the first day. But, you know, we had it, but, you know, I always said I'd never regret, but that, looking back at it now, like, to have a senior football medal in your back pocket when you deserved it, and we were in the driving seat for so long. It kind of gets to me now, but it was just always those 10 minutes where you would, the belief in against Kerry, like we were with Kerry for a lot of those games up to the last 10 minutes, and then they just pulled away. And once they pulled away any bit at all, the heads dropped and we ended up getting hammered, which, you know, it was never a true reflection of some of those games. But again, it's the mindset of the time. You roll on to the last 7 or 8 or 9 years with Tip football, that doesn't come into it anymore. They believe that they're as good as anyone. So we were just probably lacking that bit of self-belief. And also, getting beaten in the first round every year didn't help us either. If we got a couple of games under our belt, you develop as a team as well. So there was a few combinations of why we didn't do it. But again, it's history now.
Definitely you were a team in the late 90s, I think, that if the qualifiers were around, you know, you definitely could have done something.
Well, we would have said, like, and again, it's easy to say it now, but we've all, some of the older guys we still talk about now, we were definitely a top 12 team, if not a top 8 team back then, you know. We just didn't get the opportunities to showcase. And like, the amount of players that I played with, like, I was so young, but like Brian Burke and Derry Foley, John Owens, Peter Lambert, Philly Ryan, you know, all these, like, they were brilliant players of their time as well, and they didn't get the chance really to fulfil all that either. So and there's an awful lot of other names too, I hate mentioning names, but you know, they didn't fulfil their huge potential either. So it would have been nice to get a run of the qualifier system back then, but instead it wasn't to be.
Yeah, Brendan Cummins was a very good player. He's a relation of yours, is he, Declan?
Yeah, my dad and his dad are first cousins.
All right.
Ben is a massive footballer, you know. And we had our run-ins too, you know, when things were, he was hurling and football, and you know, we always wanted him for football, but I suppose he couldn't give the huge commitment that was required for both, you know. But savage talent, you know, and even in 2002 he was brilliant for us, you know. So in the first months of the final, but again, obviously Hurling was always going to, opposite to myself, Hurling was going to take over and had taken over at that stage, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he was on the freeze in 96, 97, and you pushed him out of the way then in 98 and went on them. Is that how it went?
In 96 and 97, yeah. Told him where to go then after that.
You had to serve as an understudy. You were eyeing up his freeze for 2 years.
Exactly. So, but I think it was more of a case of, you know, the way the game was gone, and you'd inside freeze, I always took the 45s, Brendan, I was talking. Funny enough, I think in 98, in Clonmel, we played Limerick in the first game. We ended up having a replay, but I ended up running out nearly through the wire in Clonmel and got my foot caught and did the ligaments in my ankle, and Brendan took over the freeze again for the next two games, you know. So, I know, just retaking was kind of fun to me. You know, Brian Burke as well was a penalty taker in 98. He was told, well, that was decided at the start of the year with Colin Brown, and we got a penalty, ended up getting a penalty against Clare in the Munster semi-final, and Brian, like the real cool head, like he said, I was going well at the time, he said, here, you take it, no qualms, no nothing, that was just
right.
That was just it. So that kind of fell on my lap, and by God, did I hate taking penalties.
Did you notice even the experienced fellas, like when you came on the scene, whatever, 96, you were just in there, then you started playing really well 97, 98, you know, you could see them starting to trust you a lot, you know, through your performances.
Yeah, you know, like, and it's well documented, like Gary Foley, my club mate, like, we had an understanding that was second to none, Willie, you know, that no one, and especially in Tip, I don't think there's anyone that ever got the better of it. You know, I knew when he had the ball, I moved, he didn't even look, and it was put into my lap, you know. So he was like, I owe him an awful lot for what I've achieved at that level, you know, club and county over those 6 or 7 years, because it was just a joy that it was telepathic at times, you know. Obviously it didn't work all the time, but I just knew, he knew I shimmied one way, I was going the other way, and I pointed one way, I meant the other way, you know. So he was brilliant for me, you know. But then, yeah, like, it's a trust. You know, fair enough, I probably wasn't the best to throw it around, but I just trusted myself to back myself to, you know, either get a score, and if we kicked it wide, it didn't turn me off having another go the next time, you know. So, but it was nice to be trusted in that way, yeah.
Yeah, he was repaying you, Declan, for all the kickouts you hit him with in 95 with the club.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I couldn't get that. if they got past the 21, would there was no tease back then, so it was...
did you have a kick-out strategy?
Not hoop for the far as you could.
And that was
it, you know. And it was great. Even look back on the old games that they're showing on TV now, like, it was, you know, to see, you know, Mickey McQuillan or John Kerrin just hoofing the ball 70 yards and four lads jumping for it is, you know, obviously the game was slower back then, but it was a joy to watch that and it was nice for myself, like, to have played in an era like that as well, and actually my own daughter, I was watching one of the games, she came in and said, not that old stuff again, Dad, you know. But I was a part of that. I don't care, she said, turn it off. So it just shows you how much it has moved on and evolved since then, you know.
Well, it hasn't, like, not only is fetching not as common, the fellas that used to specialise in getting breaks, they're nearly obsolete now too, because, you know, the break and brawl is going out to, you know, runners out to the wing and stuff like that. You're losing different kind of, I don't know.
Well, if you're caught in under a ball now and it doesn't break, you're completely exposed. And, you know, whereas, as you said there, like 15, 20 years ago, you're four wing backs, two wing forwards in, waiting to get the scraps of the break, and then if you manage to come out with it, your team was on the front foot, you know. So whereas now is you can't be yourself exposed, and you never hear anyone hearing, like, all in our time was always breaking ball, watch the breaks. That doesn't, they don't really care about that anymore.
Yeah, no, it's completely different now. Come here, we mentioned you kept running into Kerry, and a Kerry man that had to mark you on a good few occasions joins us on the line now. Seamus Moynihan, how's it going?
Yeah, 100%. No, very good. And, you know, obviously very strange times, but look, keeping the best side out.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Come here. Obviously, Declan's on the line here with me. And I was kind of scratching my head wondering how you ended up marking him, because you're centre back, wing back, and he's a specialist corner forward. And like, how did Seamus Meighan, you were troubleshooting, I presume, or something like that?
Yeah, well, I to be fair, I was just thinking back, and I remember it was my first time marking Declan was in 97 back in Tralee, and we were doing the warm up in John Mitchell's at the time. And Paddy, God rest his soul, came up to me and said, look, we're putting you back on a fella here, Declan Brown. And no, obviously, I was aware of Declan from watching him, and he was playing minors, obviously, in 95 and stuff like that. So I knew what he was about, and we had spoken about him, obviously, in training, because he was a marquee forward. And, you know, I suppose Tipperary were kind of blessed at the time that they had a couple of very good forwards. And, you know, I suppose that's why they were so good at the time. You know, they had Declan coming in as a young cub, but he was assisted there by Peter Lambert as well. And you had Brendan Cummins, obviously the hurler, but Brendan was a very talented footballer as well. So, you know, that tree alone gave a fantastic spike to their forward line and gave them a great threat. And when you have Brendan Burke and Derry Foley in the middle of the field, give him a fresh supply of oxygen on a regular basis, I tell you, know, they were a handful any day you went against them, you know. So my first time, I suppose, coming across them was in 97. And I was, Paddy basically told me, you're not playing a wing back today, you're going back marking this fella. So I had to get around 15 minutes to get my head around this and to go back in, because I hadn't played in this kind of full back line for a while again. And it's a different kind of game, whereas obviously you need to be tight to a guy. You have to be ultra tight inside the corner forward line. And you're really not getting on as much ball either, because in wing back, you can kind of make the odd attack above and you can look for the ball right inside. You're really very much doing a man-marking job. I know the game has changed a lot since, but to be fair, it's still kind of the same. But Declan was your atypical corner forward. He was a complete goal poacher and a fantastic guy. Once he got that ball, he was left and right, and he knew where the goals were. And, you know, anytime you mark a fella like that, it's the red lights go off once he gets the ball inside the 13 or 22-yard line, you know. And, you know, I wasn't long finding that out, especially in the second half when the game was just kind of running away from Tipperary. We were just kind of nailing down the kind of what should have been a kind of a comfortable enough win in Tralee, but it wasn't. And we were just kind of getting there. And the next second, the kind of ball broke between myself and Declan. And before I knew it, the ball was in the back top of the net. Fantastic goal by Declan. Like, you know, so I suppose it just shows what a kind of a predator he was. He probably didn't get a ball for 10 or 15 minutes in that second half period where Tipperary were just dying a little bit in at that stage. But the 1 second and the one opportunity he got, he buried into the top of the net. And really, Tipperary for the rest of the game then rallied. And, you know, I think we maybe won by 3 or 4 points at the end. I'm not sure, but it wasn't a comfortable win to be. Let's put it that way, like, you know.
Yeah, all right, Declan, what do you think? You were 8 points down when you got that goal. I think you got 1-1 that day, and that sparked a comeback. And I think you got it back to level, or you might have gone ahead and then Kerry won by 5 in the end. Like, what's going through your head when you haven't got a ball, like Seamus said, for 15 minutes? Like, are you? It must be difficult not to drop your head.
It is, because obviously we were, as James said, we're struggling to get it past our own midfield, you know, and when you can't win the midfield battle, you're always going to be under pressure. But like I always, you know, my game was, I never went out around the 45. There's no point in me. It was too far and too hard to get back in again. You know, I always felt that, you know, you're most dangerous closest to goal, and like some people called it laziness, which I was a lazy at times, but I just always felt that, you know, to be within the shooting range of 30, 35, where you don't necessarily, and you might see it only down through the years with me, that I would never really want to take on a man. I just always prefer to get a ball left or right and try and kick it within the distance that you know, the 35, 40 yards. I knew I didn't have the pace really or the strength to go past Seamus or anyone else or Mike McCarthy, and I just found that the best option for me was get the yard or two, and if I could score in that window, then that was the best for me, you know. But and like you said, but again, Seamus mentioned, like Peter Lambert, we were well used to living off scraps, you know, and nice. That's why we kind of had to say, if something came our way, you have to try and do something with it, you know. And looking up, they said the ball broke to himself and Seamus, and I just turned and Declan, caught Declan O'Keefe by surprise as well, that I took the shot on so early, you know. And that kind of brought us back into it and gave us another bit of life. But then again, we faded then towards the end and we lost by five, as you said. But it's like that. It's when Derry and Brian Burke were winning, you know, you could always weigh up your options a bit better than when they're not winless, because the Kerry lads just have your, you know, they have your measure then once the ball isn't coming in, and you know, and they know the place is safe then, you know.
Right. How did you go about marking him, Seamus? Like, I mean, do you mark him from in front and make sure he doesn't get it, or because when he gets it in his hands, obviously, like you said, with both feet the way he had them, he's very hard to stop.
Yeah, I went about it with difficulty, to be fair now, but it's look, Declan hit it on the head there. The guy never really went outside the 30-yard line, and for me, the farther a forward goes out the field, the happier I would have been, and I would concur with everything. I think any defender would concur with that, in the sense that, you know, the red light, if a forward can win a ball within that period and he's comfortable in scoring both left and right, well, then he's a dangerous forward. And Declan played to his strengths. So every time Declan got a ball, he was a danger, because he shot, he noticed the Colin Carkery, he had left and right, and he had an opportunity. If he spent half a second, if you were off him that amount, he was going to shell. And he was going to go for it and flat it over. So you really, there was two ways you were going to beat Declan Brown. Keep the ball away from him, don't let him get the ball, or you had to be ultra, ultra tight so that you basically broke the ball away from him and not to allow him that little bit of space where, as Declan said, if you were afforded that opportunity, he was going to have a shell and shoot it over the bar, and more often than not, it went over. You know, so Declan was an extremely difficult player to mark, and, you know, up there with the best of forwards. And like Declan mentioned that he was a lazy bear, he was anything but, because he made extremely intelligent runs within that small period, running across. He was making diagonal runs across the field. He was not running out away from the goal, which would be fantastic. He was running across, and that is always, for me, if you look at the Peter Callans, if you look at the Declan Browns, if you look at John Crowley, if you look at the Gooch, most of these guys have fantastic ability to run across where their body is half turned, receiving the body or receiving the ball. So they're basically half turned facing the goal, and that they're an extremely dangerous opponent then when they get the ball.
Yeah. How did he react to an old punch in the back or anything, Seamus? I'm sure you had to test him out.
I think Declan can stand that. I don't think I ever did that. Maybe at times I was tempted to do it, but I certainly didn't go down that road. I didn't feel it was not something that I did. But as I said, there was times I with my tongue hanging out, and especially when he got the goal, he was tempted to maybe go into the darker side. But no, I certainly didn't go down that road, even though over the few years we certainly had good old sparks, and it was all fair and honest football, to be fair.
You mentioned, I saw a player profile of yours, Declan, where you had Seamus Moynihan as your toughest opponent.
Yeah. That's exactly it, though. Well, you know, like, it was all football, you know, and after a time we had a chat. We had the time to have a chat in the match when the ball was never coming down. But no, Seamus is, you know, top class bloke as well, which is into the bag, which is even better, you know. But no, we had many a battle, and it was always great. And then I went on to Mike McCarthy, you know, same way. Mark O'Shane, none of them, thank God. The guy, because I never really, you know, I never went down that route either. Well, you know that, you know, I never felt that. Well, I wasn't strong enough, and I wouldn't be able to back it up, so there was no point in causing shite to myself either. But you know, I always, you know, I respected everyone. I got the same back. I have to say, it was always a pleasure, you know. But there were tough games and tough encounters. But like, at the end of the day, you know, there's no point falling out over GA games and that. We could shake the hands and, like I said, climb Karen Tool again with my tongue hanging out chasing him five or six years ago. You know, when you can do that and have good friends after it, it's great, you know.
Yeah, that was arguably your toughest game in 97, Seamus. You won the All-Ireland that year. That game against Tipperary, that it was only the last few minutes that you were able to get a late goal. Maurice Fitzgerald took a shot and it was ricocheted.
Yeah.
Dennis got picked up the rebound, and you know, that just gave us a little bit of a cushion. And you know, look, I suppose going from, as you said, 8 points to up, kind of cruising and kind of game over, and it was only a matter of possibly putting another point or two over the bar where Tipperary would have folded to Tipperary, and Declan obviously getting the goal to bringing us down. As far as I can remember, and Declan, you might correct me, I think it went to a point. I think I don't think they ever leveled the game. And I think, in fairness to Tipperary, if they had, and they may have missed the 45 to level it, I think if they had leveled the game that day, it would have really, it would have asked us a lot of questions mentally as well, because you know, we were just kind of, I suppose, a lot of young fellas kind of coming into the team as well, and we were in kind of a slight, I suppose, we were in transition to a point. But, you know, I suppose we just pushed on, we got that goal and got that cushion. But there's no doubting, 100%, that that game stood to us, because it was a real hot day. It was played really with high tempo, high pace, and it really stood to us going in playing Clare, who were also a very strong team at the time. And you know, obviously, had beaten us 5 years ago in the Munster final. And, you know, we were, I think that game against Tipperary really stood to us against Clare in that Munster final, and for obviously the rest of the championship, which was a semi final and a final, obviously, back in the day, you know. But no, and to be fair, if you really want to analyse it, 1996. We were haunted to get out of Clonmel. I wasn't actually playing in 96, but I can remember sitting on the bench with 10 minutes to go. That game was gone. That game was basically, it was Tipperary's in the bag, bar, I think, really? The full back slip from that. Yeah, I think a fast ball came in. It was kind of a cross field ball where it slid off a wet grass. Derek Kinnear got on. No, he took the goal excellently, but it was only that goal gave us then, and I think Tipperary kind of folded after that. But if it was a 60-minute game, Tipperary had that game. So I was sitting on the bench, and I can't remember who I was sitting beside, but I was saying, we're booking a ticket here to America for the summer to play ball, like, you know, because it was that close. And, you know, as I said, if it was a 60-minute game, we were gone. And funny enough, we went on that year then in 96 to beat Cork in the, we beat Waterford, I think, afterwards. But we beat Cork in the Munster final, which was our kind of first win in Munster for a good while, and kind of just took that monkey off the back. But and like, you look at 98, we played Tipperary up in 98. That was an extremely tight game again, where, you know, I think Tipperary got 110 again, which was similar to the score that they got in Trinity the year before. But we just got more points, and I think Morris Fitzgerald got a good shot of points that day as well. And 99. If there was any game that if I could change, it would be 99, because that day we got a goal that shouldn't have been a goal. And if, you know, I thought if there's anything as karma or good karma and bad karma, we got no look afterwards for that. I think we should have played that game again, and it would have been good for us, because it would have been a good hard challenge. And if we won, we won. If we lost, we weren't good enough to be going playing Cork in a Munster final anyhow. But, you know, I suppose there were just different times, and it's a pity that that game just wasn't played, because the goal that we got wasn't the goal, simple as that.
Well, that's the thing, and that was the big controversy. We'll skip to that. It was the Gerard Murphy goal. I vividly remember it going straight into the side netting. It was a wet day, and the umpire ducked Declan. Like, I mean, everybody knew that wasn't a goal. How that goal was allowed to stand is a complete mystery.
It is, and like, funny enough, I was captain that year as well. Well, to you know, to make it worse again, but it was one of those surreal things that we knew even up the far end that, you know, it just wasn't right. And like, the fact that like Philly Ryan and goal, Philly is a hot character, how he didn't clobber the umpire or the referee going in at half time, I'll never know, you know, because it was just one of those things that you said this couldn't be happening. And it was funny, the dressing room, like, we were competing well that day again, and it just completely took over our dressing room that we were done out, but you know, we kind of lost focus on what we were doing, and I'd be 100% honest with Willie, we weren't coming back out at half time, because you know, the game was on television, so we had a perfect opportunity to take a stand and say this isn't right, and we were kind of forced out against our will by the county board at the time, you know, and we said then, should we go out and we'll show them all that, you know, we're never going to win that game after that decision. So we kind of Seamus said, like, I wouldn't blame Kerry, you know, I'd blame our own side, and maybe like the replay would have been the best thing to do for all sides, and it would have, you know, the relationships wouldn't have been as bad as they were, because it got sour there for a while, because we just felt that we deserved a replay, you know, and as Seamus said, if we won or lost it didn't matter, just to do the right thing. But the fact that, you know, it was live on telly. If we had stayed in at half time, wouldn't come out, then this year we're in an awful predicament. But we came out 7 or 8 minutes late. We kind of kept Kerry winning that small, but we were never going to claw back the 6 points that we were beaten by, you know. But it was just like, and again, it was probably small county syndrome again. Well, you know yourself, when you think we often taught ourselves if the roles were reversed and we did that against Kerry, what would have happened? You know, or if Dublin or Tyrone or Donegal, if it happened to them, what would have happened? You know, so we just felt we didn't get the backing from maybe our own number one, which was the most disappointing part. But obviously, Munster Council and whatever else, it was just kind of swept under the carpet and just get on with it. But and again, if there was a qualifier after Woolley Archers, that like that, you'd have time to get over. But that was it. Then that was our year gone. Till the following year. No, so it kind of opened a few wounds. Listen, we were never going to beat Kerry, but it was just the fact that maybe are we being picked on that small bit. And as I said, if the roles were reversed, what would have happened? But it's a long time ago now, but it makes you wonder how you can get such a decision wrong, you know. But
yeah, was there much conversation about a replay in your dressing room, Seamus, or who would have made the call and not giving them one, or how did that work?
Yeah, I don't think there was no one in our dressing room not giving the call for. I think unfortunately all those things are kind of political and out of the players' hands. As such, really, you go, you play your match, you train again on the Tuesday night, you meet up, and you know, I suppose all you're kind of concerned is what is the next match or what is going on, and you're kind of going as what you're fed. But you know, at the end of the day, if the Munster Council had come back to Paddy or come back to Kerry County Board and said, look guys, we have to do something here, and as Declan alluded to, there was no qualifiers, there was no back door, it was over for Tipperary, which, you know, that was the way up to 2000-2001, I think, was the first kind of qualifiers came in. And you know, it was a horrible way to leave a championship after all the hard work from that game was probably played in May sometime. You were working from October, 7 months done to be feel that you were leaving a championship and you know, not beaten fair and square, you know. So look, I don't think for a second if Paddy was told, look, we have to go up to Tipperary or the game will be played again in Tralee or whatever, if there was a replay, you know, in hindsight, I think Kerry would never and the players would never have had an issue, albeit that we had really tough games with Tipperary since 96 and we were getting over the line and we were just doing enough to win. But at the end of the day, we would have done the right thing and we would have gone on with it. And as I said earlier, if we won, we would have been a better team for the Munster final in 99. And if we lost, well, you know what? That's the way it is, like, you know?
Yeah, in a way that it kind of showed the kind of respect you had for Tipperary, and that it's nice not to, I wouldn't really want to have played them again, maybe. You know, I know it wasn't your decision, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, to be fair, I don't think it was our decision. And if we had to play Tipperary again, we would have played Tipperary. But there's no doubting, as you said, once we got into Munster final, I suppose the majority of fellas would have said, you know, that's out of the way. And that is, I suppose, the killer instinct in championship where you're saying, look, you've won competitor out, he's gone, you're not coming across that team again. And, you know, but having said that, the right thing, of course, at that time would have been to play a replay because it was unfair. And, you know, and I firmly believe we would have come out a better team either way. Win, lose or draw, because you will always find out better. You'll find out things about your team. We'd have regrouped, and you know that's what football and that's what sport is about. But you know, it's disappointing in the sense that we had great games in 96, 97, and 98. I think that really in 99 was the kind of defining moment, because in the early noughties, Tipperary, I saw the likes of Brian and Peter and Derry were probably coming to the end of their tether, and Tipperary kind of peeled away from Munster at that stage. They weren't competing as strongly as they were, and Limerick then kind of became the new boys in town, and they took over that mantle. And then from 2000 and one on, we were having fierce battles with Limerick up to 2005 and 2006, you know. So but that battle that we used to have with Tipperary from the kind of mid-90s up to 99, that was kind of the last game. And it's a pity it's kind of finished in that kind of a in that way, because it deserved better than that.
Yeah, no, it does. It's not as bad as the Loud Mead goal, I suppose, that didn't get a replay either. So I suppose that's something. Come here, before I let you go, Seamus, like Declan was a big fan of Kerry growing up, the golden years and all these kind of things. He described Kerry players as pure gentlemen. He said, I thought nothing of striking up a quaint conversation on the pitch in between plays. Is he talking about you there, or who is he talking about?
Yeah, well, look, Camille, that's maybe a bit of cute hoorism now going on, but as well, and trying to put assholes like Declan there and keep his attention away from the ball and whatnot, you know. But look, I thought no different to Declan. I grew up watching the golden years as well, and, you know, and especially, I suppose, over the last 10 to 11 weeks, I still have the VCR at home, and any odd all night there, if I got an opportunity, once the kids weren't watching YouTube or Netflix, I'd throw on the Kerry golden years. And look, it's different football, and I suppose the video is brilliant in the sense that it shows all the flashy football. And, you know, I suppose Jacko's goal in 1981, for me, is probably one of the great goals in terms of movement, the whole forward line getting on the ball, how fast they moved it, and in results ball and back in the net by the midfielder. You know, but, you know, I suppose if you watched all the games, the warts and all, it was a totally different game. It was slower ball on the ground, a lot of rooting, a lot of kicking. I think there was a statistic in one of the All-Ireland finals in 81. I think the ball was hand-passed 81 times, whereas in last year's final, it was hand-passed 426 times. So football has changed hugely. And, you know, but having said that, I think the players back in the Kerry golden year, they would have adapted to any level because they were extremely good footballers. But look, Declan, no different to myself, grew up watching those, and it was certainly good football. And, you know, I suppose my compliment I will give to Declan is that Declan would have made any Kerry team because he was that kind of a player. He taught on his feet. He both left and right. He was a complete and utter predator, and they are the type of corner forwards that Kerry will look for. And, you know, he did that with his club, Mile Rovers. He did it with the Raby Cup team that we won in 1999. And, you know, it was great to see Declan winning the Tommy Murphy Cup in 2005 up in Croke Park and winning an All-Ireland final. And, you know, those things can't be taken away. They're there. They're in the bag. And, you know, Declan is up there with all the marquee forwards that they talk about.
Seamus, thanks very much for joining the call. I really appreciate it.
No bother, guys. Mind yourself. And best of luck there, Declan. Okay. Good luck. Bye-bye.
I'm thinking what he said there, Declan, about cute tourism, because Senan Connell was telling a story about Mark and Tomás O'Shea in a league game down in Kerry in Tralee, and Tomás would be, are you staying down for the night? Are you going for a few pints? And then he'd be gone like a shot. when the boat. Maybe they're cute whores trying to keep your mind occupied.
I know, like I said, it's always the way I was as well, you know, with chat back. So I don't see the reason why you wouldn't have never going to detriment my game anyway, you know. I was always focused, and like Seamus said, even on the flip side of that, you'd be chatting away, next week you'd be gone, you know, the ball's coming. So you'd be, you know, there's always there's two sides to every story, you know. But no, Seamus, like I said, what a gentleman, you know, an unbelievable footballer, and again, many a battle we had.
Yeah, one of the great gentlemen of the game. Come here, that 99 game, your head wasn't right that year, was it, Declan? Because you tried to go dual, you were captain. You were marking Mike McCarthy that day in 99. It wasn't one of your better games. And, like, I mean, it wasn't a good year at all. You were dropped from the hurlers for the league final.
Yeah, so that game, I suppose, not too many people, like, I was doing my college exams. I did an exam the morning after, back in Waterford again, and my dad actually was sick at the time as well. Not too many people knew that he had foreign bowel cancer at the time. So we kind of went through that as well, and not to make excuses for playing badly, but just the head was kind of all over the place that day, you know. And I would never be one to make excuses for my performance. It's just, it is what it is. I never really, you know, playing bad. I was trying to write it for the next day, but just those things, and I said the hurling, trying to give it all to the hurling as well the same year. So it probably, like, looking back in 99 was just, you know, it was probably easier for me to give out about the goal rather than put attention on myself, you know, the goal that wasn't. But it was, yeah, just there was a combination of a lot of things that came at me in the space of a couple of weeks, you know. And what age was I then? 20, 21, being captain as well of the football team. And no, I wasn't there a hell of a lot of time either. I was focusing solely on the on the hurling, and you know, so just a load of things came at me at the same time, and it came out in a bad performance for me, you know. So which was a pity, because I always back myself to whether I kick 20 points or kick no points is to I tried my best and give it all, and that day I tried and tried, and it just didn't work really. And that was, you know, I taking stupid shots and taking stupid decisions, which I never, you know, and very rarely did, you know. So you had to be all over the place, but again, you realise the value of, like, the GA is great, but like there's more to life outside of that, you know. So thankfully my dad made a full recovery, he's fine, but just as a 20-year-old, you think when you hear the word cancer, you're, you know, you think it's the end of the world, like. So but just as I said, we got on with it, and you had the hurling then as well, being dropped that year as well didn't help. But those are agile things, that's life.
You were harshly dropped, really, if we're being honest, because you'd played all the league games and the award for Crystal games, and you were the third highest scorer that year, and you didn't even make the squad then for the league final, which was a strange one.
Yeah, I suppose that's where the vote of contention came, you know. It's the way Nicky did it. I probably, listen, down through the years, I probably added fuel to the fire as well by, you know, keep going on about it and on about it and on about it. But like, it's just the fact that, you know, you're as you said, I played five league games, and you know, I was absolutely septic against Lair now in the semi final. I was knocking a guy called Enda Flannery, you know, and he was probably a foot and a half over me. But everywhere I went, the ball went the other way, you know, and anticipating right. breaks, and I was useless, I have to say, and I'd hold my hand up, and I thought maybe I'd, you know, I probably thought I wasn't going to start the league final, but I'd be on the bench, but I wasn't even on the bench, so that was that's where it all kicked off, you know. Like I said, I probably went on a bit too much about it too, but it was just the way I never had no problems being dropped or any issues being dropped. It's just the way it was handled, and again, I probably held the grudge for too long, but that's the way.
Right, and have you bumped into Nicky since? I'm sure you have on social occasions. There's a couple.
No, we haven't.
No. Right, okay. Maybe it's better by the sounds of you that you don't bump into each other.
Exactly. Actually, listen, this is water under the bridge. That's the way it is, you know. So, Nicky was a hero of mine growing up. So, you know, it's always disappointing the way it worked out. But that's it.
Yeah, come here. I want to talk to you about the Tommy Murphy Cup win. This was in 2005, and to be honest, I didn't pay that much attention to the Tommy Murphy Cups, if I'm being totally honest. But like, I mean, I was looking at the teams in that: Fermanagh, Longford, Roscommon, and Wexford. And we know what Wexford did in the next few years. We knew Fermanagh were in an All Ireland semi final in 2004. Like, that was a good standard Tommy Murphy Cup.
Yeah, I suppose it was again Sean Kelly, present, a good friend of mine. You know, that's one thing I'd always say. He brought in the club finals and for junior intermediate, which we were lucky enough as well in Wild Overs to play in an All Ireland junior hurling final, you know. So that's down to him and the Tommy Murphy Cup, right, as well, to play in front of, you know, Tyrone and Armagh, I think, was it in 05, they were playing the semi-final.
Yeah. Semi-final,
yeah. It was huge, absolutely huge. And we had seen, I think it was a Wicklow or Antrim, Wicklow, I think, won it the year before us, and we'd seen the joy it brought to them. So we kind of said, once we were beaten, and we played Kerry in the first round in 05, and they hammered us. And, you know, and then Westmeath, we played them in the qualifier, and then it's the last minute free to draw the game. So we ended up going into the Tommy Murphy Cup. So we kind of said, so why not give it a go? And it's funny, if now you think of it, well, like, we played Roscommon in the semi-final of that, in Thurles on a Tuesday night. You know, you wouldn't put a junior B club match on Tuesday night. That's the funny part, looking back, and I said, how in the Lord? Like, it just fixtures didn't suit either Tipper or Roscommon, whatever it was, but that's what we came up with, on a Tuesday night. And they had to travel down to Thurles on a Tuesday night. So I think it was just kind of get this out of the way job. And then obviously we win. We played well that night, in front of about 10 people, I think. You know, so then you realise after, geez, we're actually going to Croke Park. So, like I said, to like the Donegal match in 03, it kind of made it all that sweeter, that, geez, we're glad we did give it a rattle, you know. And then to play Wexford, who were going well the year before, I mean, Matty was on fire, and they ran Armagh. Did they get to a league final or something?
Yeah, they played in the league final. They beat Armagh then in the championship.
Beat Armagh, you know, so they were they were flying as well. So we kind of said, you know, this is not a Mickey Mouse. Even though a lot from a lot of people looking on the from the outside in, it was probably a Mickey Mouse. But just when you come against Wexford in Croke Park, it was we said we'd give it a go. And how up for Wexford were, like, we don't know. But again, like, for me personally, you know, to walk to home and stand in steps was massive. No matter what it was huge. And I got that honour because Loughmore, Castellane nominated me. They had no representatives on the squad, so I got nominated. And you know, so it was great. And again, some people probably don't recall, like, the year before in 04, we actually gave a walkover in Championship.
Against Fermanagh. So
to come from that hugely low point, like, it was just devastating to get into Croke Park to win the Tom Murphy Cup. And, you know, looking back on it, it was huge for us at the time. Like, the Tom Murphy Cup obviously drifted away, and the following year we were in it again. And I don't think, you know, a second Tommy Murphy Cup medal wasn't high on the priority list for a lot of lads, you know, including myself, you know. So, but we got a trip to New York out of the end of the year as well. So we stayed in New York. So it was great. But they're great memories that we've always had out of that, you know.
And I'm sure, like, lifting the cup, the Croke Park is full at that stage for an All-Ireland semi-final. And, like, I'm sure for the whole of the second half, the stadium is practically full. And, you know, your goal gets a good, you know, good atmosphere for your scores and stuff like that too.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. We actually played that. The stadium was full for the second half, you know. And like I said, to walk the steps to lift the cup, I dabbled on a good bit on the speech, I have to say. I said I wasn't going to be back there again, so I stayed going where I was going. But, yeah, you know, like, here, again, like, from the likes of ourselves, and you know yourself, well, you played in lean times as well, like, it's, there are little things you grasp onto and you hold onto, and they'll live forever. And, like, no matter what it is, like, winning teams always have a good bond, no matter what you're winning. Like, you're getting beaten in the first round every year, you know, you don't meet up that often, but like, the winning teams, you're always in close contact with them, you know. So but again, they're our little rewards that, you know, we put in the same time, same effort as everyone. And it was nice to get the big day out in Croke Park, albeit Tommy Murphy Cup, but still nice.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I mean, and everybody's talking now about a tier two, and amazingly, some of the weaker counties are speaking out against it. You know, when you have the example of that Tommy Murphy Cup for you, you know, like, I'm on the side of, I can't understand why would anybody want to be going out every year to the good teams instead of getting runs in the Championship every year?
Yeah, like, it's funny, and you go back to 07, my final year, my final game, like, the GA in their wisdom, that if you were beaten in your province, the first round of your province, you went straight into the Tommy Murphy Cup. You were missing from the qualifiers, if you recall that. So we were beaten by, you know, 07, we were beaten by Cork and Limerick, and next minute we were catapulted straight into Tommy Murphy Cup, and it was just an absolute disaster. That kind of really finished it for me for Intercounty, because I said, Lord God, no matter how bad you are, you deserve a crack at the qualifiers, and then went to Tommy Murphy. But I think obviously they backtracked on it after that. But that was really, you know, we played Clare in the Tommy Murphy Cup in Ardfin, and I remember John Owens, and, like, you know, I won't forgive, but it was disappointing for some of the players that they just didn't make themselves available. Like, you're trying to ring players to see will they come and play the match. Like, you know, that's how belittling it was, and I don't blame players in a way that we didn't get a fair crack at the qualifier. So so I packed it in after that. I felt sorry for John Owens, my club mate. You know, that was a tough year, but maybe it catapulted us tip on to another level after that, you know, we can't keep going like this. And John Evans came in a way to kind of change things around and change the mindset. So, but I'm like you, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you said we have to tip after the second year. But now, as tip has developed, you know, would we be a top 16 team? I think we would. So maybe I wouldn't be shouting for it. Maybe I wouldn't care as much, would you know, that if Tip were a top 16, I wouldn't really care. But I would be like you. I'd be saying, like, if we can get a couple of games under our belts, you know, that'd be the way to go.
So, like, I mean, you retired at 29. Like, I mean, you were still young. Did that just piss you off? Like, I mean, did you get kind of down about just, you know, being treated, you know, like dirt, really, that you're on back into the Tommy Murphy Cup and no qualifiers? Did that speed up the mind, or were you thinking about that kind of stuff anyways?
Well, I was struggling with injuries, and it was all coming to the fore, you know, that, you know, is a time to, like, I always said I wanted to get out on my own terms. I wanted to get out not crippled either, you know, and I was heading that way for, I mean, groin surgery, knees done, you know, groin again, hips, like, everything was just coming against me. And then to be told that you're not good enough, I think there was, how many, wasn't 16 teams, what was it that went in? I think it was 8 teams. All Division 4, yeah. Actually all Division 4 teams, sorry.
Yeah.
All Division 4 teams that didn't win their first round, that they were if they didn't win their first round, they were into Tommy Murphy. So that was really the final nail in the coffin, and, you know, I just packed it in that night. And it went out kind of quietly, you know, there was no one at the match, there was no nothing, and only Paul Fitzgerald inside the goal, he was really only the only person that really knew that I was going to announce it that night, you know, so I had spoken to him, and he was kind of saying, hang in there, and I had 12 years done at that stage as well, so, and a lot of my teammates and friends were gone as well at that stage, you know, so there was a newer crowd coming in as well, so,
right.
So it was easier to step away rather than turn sour and bitter with everyone, and that was no good either, you know.
Right. Is the 2003 performance against Donegal, like, that definitely got you the All-Star that year? Like, I mean, that was an unbelievable performance. It was 5 from play in Croke Park, and how many in total? Maybe 8 in total, was it? But, like, I mean,
yeah.
Is that the one you look back on with the fondest kind of memories, given the quality of the opposition, the venue, and, you know, just the kind of profile of the game?
Yeah, like I said, and it was live on television as well, you know. So, there, like I said, there are the things we always held on to. But, like, that in 2002, funny enough, I had a better year in 2002 than in 03, you know. So it's mad the way, and I always, you know, I was wondering the All-Stars, you know. And I'm not a massive fan of the individual awards, and I never was. And don't get me wrong, it's lovely to get them. But, you know, for me to be picked a wing forward was, you know, a joke, because I say it must have been.
Yeah.
If I was ever wing forward, if I ever out past the 45 or near the 45 in my career, it was a very small amount of times.
You got a nosebleed.
Exactly, you know, so to be picked a wing forward, like, no matter how good, you know, you were going, you shouldn't be, and that's why I'd love to see the offsets go back to the old way, just, and if it's yourself and myself up for corner forward or wing back,
yeah,
you know, pick the best man and that's it. So, like, for me to be, as I said, it was great to get it, but to be picked wing forward is a bit of a, I know it's like they said they had to fit me in somewhere, but Jesus Christ, it's wing forward of all places. But
who was in the fuck? Steve McDonald, I suppose, and Muggsy, yeah, and Canavan.
Steve McDonald, Adrian Sweeney, Stevie Mack. Who was
Stevie O'Neill? No, it was someone from Tyrone.
Stephen O'Neill,
right? Okay, yeah.
I was Peter Canavan himself. I'm not sure, but, you know, so it was. It was a case you nearly preferred to be left out rather than, I won't say a mockery, but it was disappointing,
yeah,
that way, you know. Like, I much prefer to be saying, well, you weren't good enough in the corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting that you say that. Like, you're the first person who got an All-Star in a position you never played that has actually said, that's a bit of a joke. I'm not a wing forward.
Yeah. No. Like, if I was, I might have been, like, there was times that I would have lined out a centre forward, you know, but just solely to stay and hold the 11 position. Like, then again, at time, the game has evolved and all, there's no way I'd be up and down the field, you know, but
yeah,
I just, that was my thoughts on it, you know. I'm like, you know, I said it's brilliant to win it and no one can take it off me, but I just felt that, you know, you'd like to be pitted against your peers and the best, and if you're not good enough, then you're not good enough. So it's, you know, there's obviously a few lads wing forward who were probably saying, geez, what the hell did I do, you know, do wrong, or what did he do to deserve to be in there? But but definitely, like, '02 was probably a better year for me, you know. And, like, you're talking about the match at Donegal was electric and super, but
the Cork final,
the drawing game was huge, you know. It was one of those games where, you know, everything went right for us for 35-40 minutes, you know. But the other games, like I said, to back it up year after year, like, for in '02 and '03 was nice. That we actually went to Lanzarote for a training camp with Tip in on the strength of the getting to the Munster final in 03 or in 02, and we went in 03, and that was the best crack ever of the week. It was just unbelievable, you know, training and a few drinks here and there for the lads. But I remember coming back from the trip, we played National League against Longford in Nina of all places, and they kicked the living daylights out of us. So we were getting, why are we wasting money on those going off in a training camp? But you know, lo and behold, we in turn we ended up playing Donegal in Croke Park and gave a massive account of ourselves, you know. So it's mad the way things worked out. Like that week definitely it hindered us in the week or two after it, but
yeah,
like, the whole year it, the bond, yeah, it was like, was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You know?
It's a funny one. You mentioned the Cork Munster final and that occasion. It was a really weird one because you were sticking in, the GAA Go stuck out some of your scores there, and like you were kicking unbelievable scores in the first half, but it was into the Cork end. It was like nobody was cheering for the day. There was no flags, yeah. But only about 10 Tipperary people down at the very front of the terrace.
Yeah, you know, but we were always well used to that, you know. I did, like, the crowds are at never, it never really bothers. And that's why Thurles now is the place to play. It's smashing, but you'd always love Clonmel because, you know, you get 3,000 or 4,000 in there and it's packed, you know, and it's just that atmosphere is electric. So, but definitely that, like that day. But it dried up big time in the second half. I remember Cork with Anthony Lynch. Like, Anthony Lynch was serious footballer, and he kind of got the measure of me, and Peter Lambert was tightened in the other corner, and it just dried up big time, you know. And then we kind of rallied in the end to get a draw out of it, you know. But again, they walloped us in the replay. It's mad, you know, that in the first 6 days how you could go from should have winning a match to completely annihilated, you know. So as you said earlier on, it's you get one chance at the big teams, and that proved that.
Hey, here's one question before we get into the quick fire round and finish up is, and I think I asked Matty Ford at one stage the same question, is no disrespect to teammates, but it was how good the two of you were when this is even playing with club football or Tipperary in the years when, you know, you were, I don't want to say much, didn't have as much support because you won't agree to that on your teammates. But, you know, when you're the marquee forward and most 90% of the ball is going to go to you. Like, I always thought that'd be a fantastic thing, that you're getting every ball that you're running for, or nearly everyone. Or does it get to a point where it gets too obvious and you'd love to say to them, just vary it up a bit. It's obvious what, you know what I mean, what they're doing here. Just wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, so, likewise with Matty, like, it's just, I always felt like, and I would like to think myself a team player, but I would always back myself and trust myself to take the right option, and if that was deemed the selfish option, then I could live with that, you know. So I would always make myself available. Obviously, as I said earlier with Seamus, you'd never see me dropping deep to the midfield to get a ball and to want this amazing run and try and do it all. I just, you know, pitched there between the 21 and 30 yards and as the ball came in around that area, then you were on it and you pounced and you had to make the most. And obviously, it didn't gladly be under so much pressure out the field that the ball might be coming in the way you wanted either. And then you throw a few backs at him, you know. But it was never, like, we had a few fantastic players, even with Tip, like David O'Brien, Peter Lambert, Paul Kell, all these guys, Fergal Callan. So it was never, I don't know, it was a design always to come in to myself, but I always made myself available. If it came in, it came in. And you know, it's funny, actually, there's a story. In 03, we played Kerry in Tralee, and it must be 26, 27 degrees, and I hated playing the heat. I just hated it. And I was going well, and Mark and Ian Fitzbarr the same day, and I was actually flying at the start. But like that, the ball was, I was showing for everything, and I just was completely, absolutely knackered after about 20 minutes.
Right.
And the doctor, Peter Merchant, came in to me, and he said, leave the next three balls go. So, you know, don't even bother going looking for him, you know. So it's just, you could tire yourself out after 20, 25 minutes, you know, and be no good for the rest of the game, whereas the other teams probably always had the couple of forwards that'll, you know, take the pressure off each other, you know. So, but no, I never felt pressure like that, Woody, but I said I'd show for the ball, and again, if I didn't want to, I wouldn't show, and that's where the laziness came into it, you know.
But that's it, though. Like, I mean, all the good players, I wonder how Bernard Brogan, for example, sometimes he looks like he doesn't care, or the Gooch might look like he doesn't care. He might turn his back on it. Like, he'll let you know he doesn't want that unless it gets to an area where he's going to be able to win it, you know, within his scoring range. And that's what all the top scorers do. Whereas, you know, you'd have a fella like myself playing full forward and he's running around like a headless chicken out to the 45, just wants to get on ball, you know, that kind of way. Because I couldn't score like he could.
Yeah. Well, like, that's it. Like, I valued being in the right place at the right time more so than trying to get on the ball.
Right.
You know, and that was it. And it's just, you know, I needed all my energy and all my effort to be what I did best, not, as I said, not going searching for the ball. And again, it sounds lazy and all that, but it just, you know, there was no point in me winning the ball out again on the half hour line or 45 or out midfield and trying to do something that I couldn't do. I knew I couldn't do that, you know, so you don't end up passing and being in the way out there. So, play to your strength, and that was always the way I operated. And like I said, you took the good with the bad, you know, and this time you get slated, more often than not, you get slated, but that was always it.
And there was no attacking cornerbacks back then, Declan, so you're right, no, you're all right.
If a corner back then went down past you the ball, like, you just lifted to your wing forward to tackle him.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
That was the way it was. Whereas now, it's, as you said, you'd be up and down the field, left, right, and centre, because your wing back is gone, or your wing forward has gone somewhere else as well. So, like, back then, it's, like, if a full back was going out playing 1-2s, he was getting nailed by your wing forward and then by your midfield. Like, it wasn't the case of dancing or prancing through the whole way up the field and kicking a score. So you had that luxury as well. But geez, if it was playing now, well, I wouldn't be playing now, will you? I think I'd have to revert back to goal if that was the case, because you couldn't keep up at that level.
No, they're a different breed now. Right, come here, Declan. We'll come back with 10 questions. All right, Declan, 10 questions round. These are quick fire. Well, depending on your answer, I might stop on them. So question one, if you weren't playing for Tipperary, what county would you like to play for? I think I know the answer to this one.
Obviously, you know, if you ask Kerry, yeah.
Number two, worst ever game.
It has to be the qualifier match against Westmead in 05. The game, I missed the last minute free, and I got a couple of injections into my hip flexor before the match, and I shouldn't have played. You know, so that was to be on the end of it, to have that last chance that I kick over my sleep and miss it and knock it out of the qualifiers was tough one to take. Tough one. Like, I should have been brave enough to not play, but so be it.
Right, who were you marking that day as a matter of interest? John Keane, probably, was it?
John Keane, John, yeah. Yeah.
A tough player to mark, he was.
Or a rash, an absolute rash. He's again, brilliant, brilliant player, brilliant guy as well.
Yeah, very good. Most difficult opponent?
Seamus Moynihan, again. You know, obviously, because he wasn't into the dirt or the pulling of the dragon or anything, and it was just pure football. And by God, could he play football as well? You know, which made it harder if you were marking a cornerback that just was there to stop you. You know, you knew you had a chance, but like, Seamus could just head it everywhere.
Yeah, total footballer. Number four, if you could sign one player for Tipperary during your time, who would it be?
Well, there's two of them I would, if I could, I'd apologise, or Matty Ford.
Right, so you go for a partner inside. Would they not be kind of having the ball you're going to get there? Although, Joyce would say 11 and give you a few nice balls.
No, I'd be on the freeze. That's it, touch it. No, don't freeze. they wouldn't be taking them.
No, there'd be a row over number five. Well, Brennan Cummins found that out to his expense. Number five, favourite position and your best position. It's an easy one.
Favourite and best would be full forward. You know, obviously I need a full forward now, but I always found playing at the edge of the square is the fact that you can turn left or right. You know, in either corner, you're kind of, the defenders know to push you out onto the right or left, whereas in the full forward line, you had that option of turning left or right. I always liked there.
All right. Number six, hardest, dirtiest player you've marked?
Like I said, I haven't come across, thankfully, a dirty player. No, genuinely, I haven't come across dirty players. But I think one of the hardest opponents I've had, and you'd know him, was Andrew McLaughlin from Kildare.
Oh, yeah.
You know, an unbelievable cornerback. My God, was he tight, you know, and Hardy, great player, you know, and mad for road as well, attacking.
Did he walk on your feet?
No, I don't think so anyway. But we played him in a league matchup with Newbridge, and he was one of my toughest guys. Obviously, he was super. Like I said, no dirt, no nothing, just sticky, you know.
Yeah, I think he used to walk on my feet because I was talking shit in his ear.
That might be it.
No, but he was a good player. Had a few good battles with him as well. Yeah, he was a tough fella. Like he was definitely. Number seven, best advice a manager ever gave you?
I suppose any most managers, like always, like Seamus McCarthy was probably played a huge part in my career. You know, and you know, he was always one to say just to back yourself and trust yourself, you know. And I always did that, you know. And as I said, sometimes it backfired, other times it worked out. But I think as a forward, you have to be that bit, little bit ruthless and that bit selfish, and take whatever comes your way, you know, take it on the chin, no matter if it's good or bad, you know. But just to back yourself and trust yourself.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Number eight, player you most admired from another team.
Well, obviously, I think growing up, there's a couple of guys here. Like, obviously, Kerry, like Mikey Sheehy from the golden years, and Morris Fitz, you know, and then currently, like, Peter Canavan, Stevie Mack, the Gooch, you know, they're all forwards, you know, and Jack O'Shea, obviously, again, is, you know, there's so many there that I would have, I won't say modelled myself on, but just to see the way they operated, and like, there's so many good forwards there that thankfully I got to play with on tours and international tours and all that, and you know, you can see you lined up with those guys.
Okay, number nine, what other manager would you like to have played under?
I think Paddy O'Shea is probably the standout one. I got the opportunity in Railway Cup in 99, and my God, it was some crack. It was just unbelievable to have him managing the team. You know, just everything was great mood, jovial, great crack, but serious at the end of it, you know. So
right.
But Paddy was just a special character anyway, you know. So
he was a unique character, Paddy. Yeah. Definitely, like, I mean, and probably like a very good manager as well. Two All-Irelands with Kerry, and a load of Munsters when Cork had been winning and before he took over.
Exactly.
Number 10, where do you keep your medals and your All-Stars?
Well, funny enough, I always, you know, there were two things I always looked after was, and one was all the jerseys. I used to love swapping jerseys, Willie, and used to get in so much trouble with the county board. You'd end up having to pay for jerseys out of your expense money and all that. But I just loved collecting jerseys, and I have unbelievable amount of them there. And my All-Stars are on the mantelpiece in my sitting room, and I have all my medals framed, and the three frames there, hanging up on the landing. So one thing that always bugged me, and I hate it, and I don't know whether you're the same, but lads saying, I don't know where my medals are. You know, that drives me bananas, because you work so hard for them.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone of them to me are valuable, you know. So I suppose 5 or 6 years ago I got them all framed, and so they're hanging up on the wall. So it's just, as I said, you work so hard, and it's something small to look at, you know. We never got the All-Ireland or the Munster, so they're the pride and joy, the jerseys and the medals.
Right, okay, that's it. That's an interesting one. You're right, an awful lot of lads do say they don't know where their medals are, and it's usually the lads that have won maybe 7 or 8 All-Irelands.
Yeah.
So many of them, like, I mean, fellas that haven't won as much know exactly where they are.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And what do you do with the jerseys? Do you have like a man cave that you've all the jerseys framed in?
They're all in a bag in the wardrobe there. So like, I often, you know, the ones that we played in, now they were tense, you know, you couldn't wear them now, you know. And I often thought maybe my two little daughters will down the line they could have them, but sure, geez, they'd be swimming on them, so they'd be no good to the girls either. But no, just, as I said, just to have that variation of jerseys, and I always always like swapping them, and you know, so they're probably gathering dust now, is all they're good for, but it's nice to have them.
Nice to look back on them in the future. Come here, Declan. Thanks for giving us so much time in your day. Brilliant stuff.
Super. Appreciate it. I really enjoyed it, Colin.
Brilliant stuff from Declan there. We're not back on Monday. It's bank holiday. So we'll talk to you all on next Thursday with another tribute show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.